up, shuffle up. Now the time to buckle up. Well, it's getting harder. Straight to the top, hustle up, shuffle up. Now the time to shuffle up. It's getting harder. Take it easy, hey, baby. Take it nice and slow. Take it easy. And I know you feel what I think. Clap your hands, clap your people, come and glorify. Put away all troubles on the double, come be purified. Be up. Now the time to buckle up. Well, it's getting harder. No time to stop. Hustle up, shuffle up. Now the time to buckle up. Well, it's getting harder. Straight to the top. Take it easy, take it breezy. No time to be lazy. Come on, my baby. Take it easy. Shuffle up, now the time to buckle up. Well, it's getting harder. Straight to the top, hustle up. Shuffle up, now the time to buckle up. Well, it's getting harder. Well, you know this is being in the concrete jungle. When Babylon walls them crumble, all first, better don't you stumble. And as a lion, you're cool and humble. Anything we're fussy, can we a dismantle? Mark at the beat, me a trumpet, me a on the microphone. You see, I never leave you alone.
A clear mind produces a healthy body and every kind of positive living.
Vital is total. Be careful of Babylon and their mystery. Mentally, spiritually, physically. Fix up your water, meet your kidney. If you leave it to them, are you will sick it, sick it. Say, take it from me, me and the herbal picnic. Right now, me gone in a category. I mean, no one of innocent, hardly my lanta. Matrin, Santa, Karma, Kusha. Say, give me a little more of this spring water. Before the herb team is up on the fire. Keep me temple clean like a jar desire. With veggie and the fruits and a good juicer. Say, how me for lose with me and the blender. Say, don't forget this a mother culture. So, careful of Babylon and them is tricky. Mentally, physically, spiritually. Fix up your wand and meet your kidney. You leave it to them and you will seek it, seek it. Say, take it from me, me and the Rasta pick it. Say, right on me gone in a category. Herb is for the healing of the nation. That is what Jack is reaching everyone. Only that to do is to song and stand. That the universe works with a very divine plan. But it's one to the microphones and conversations. And everyone about the verbal plan. Only that to do is work with Jack. And you will surely, surely understand. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital is total. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital is total. In the corona with the cascara. Use the cannabis to cure the glaucoma. Make lanciate, help eczema. The chamomile good for the diarrhea. Blood pressure high, sarsaparilla. Powder up for ears and nosebleed. Regulate the allergies, chase the tumor. They drink the weed grass if you have the cancer. Pass it with the lungs, liver and the bladder. Obesity, cola, menstrual disorder. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital is total. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital is total. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital is total. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital.
Come and sit down on the table with me and me jaw. Wondering what to give me sick mother ring law. Only to remember the good cat's claw. The cure rheumatism and so what. Over earth is slippery M and the Dan Qua. Surely I will really tell you what it good for. To build and repair the genitalia. Say take it from me, me a mother culture. Herbal is natural, natural is vital. Vital is vital, vital is total. Herbal is natural, natural is vital, vital is vital, vital is total. Be careful of Babylon, not them is tricky. Mentally, physically, spiritually, so pick up your water, be your kid. To them, I use my ticket.
Sister Carol. Herbal is natural. It's a warning. Careful, Babylon, that is tricky. Before that, we heard a couple from Queen Omega, Hustle Up, Ganja Party, Selassie I Know. A classic from Althea and Donna. Uptown top ranking. This is going to be the last tune for the high grade reggae show tonight. So thanks for tuning in. And blessings to each and every one.
Hill. It looks like that's that with, I guess it's called High Grade Reggae. And I'm not sure when that show plays, but you just heard it. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. Though once you get to Freak Radio, don't forget to click on the little dot at the top of the transmitter icon or you won't be able to find us. Not sure why I'm saying that, because anybody listening has already reached us. So, hey, welcome to Free Radio's Bathrobs Piers Broadside Show. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobs Piers Broadsides with grunting in the corner with the occasional inaudible comment is Dr. Mike, who has his own show on, I think it's Mondays and Tuesdays, or is it Tuesdays and Wednesdays? It's Mondays and Tuesdays. So if you wish to check in with Meditation Mike, as I sometimes call the doc, check it out. He's a bit more esoteric and a universalist than I am. I spend my time attacking the sacred cows, of Santa Cruz, and hopefully creating some nice beefsteak for those of us who are carnivores. In any case, today it's going to be a numerous interviews. I've done a little research this afternoon trying to update the public records that I've been getting repeatedly and persistently after great effort from the city offices, the police department, some extent from Parks and Rec, and generally trying to get the whole picture behind the claims of the NIMBYs and bigots and bureaucrats and gentrification people who are intent on transforming the class structure of the town by eliminating the poorest stratum. And that's what, of course, they are doing. They're quite successful at it. They've been doing it for decades, and they're continuing to do it, although more intensely and acidically and toxically in the last few years, with really visible and now respectable bigotry by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz. I, of course, don't like this kind of stuff, and I wish to... Well, I've invited the bigots to present their perspectives here on the show just because underneath a bigot there is always a confused, abused, or bemused human being who I don't expect I'm going to convert anybody, but it's important to catch the experience of people because everyone has experiences, and that can be a valuable thing even if it comes from a person with a series of opinions that denies the rights of other people to exist, which, you know, it's not really unusual in our society. I think most of us, though we claim to be, caring people who don't want to hurt other people, we live in the middle of a society that exists through essentially feeding off the life energies of the world. And we... really hard to divorce ourselves from it. I haven't done too much of that. I talk about it a bit, but, you know, I'm still eating hamburgers, which, of course, take up huge amounts of other people's life energy. It takes a huge amount of energy to grow food that will feed cattle, that will feed me. And so we're all in the midst of this, and it's important to recognize that, so perhaps someday, if not us, then those who come after us can pick up what remains of the world and move on, if much remains. So, what I've got today is, well, boy, I didn't even go into our theme song, but just for all you old-timers who have a nostalgia for that theme song, which I've gotten a little tired of myself, let's do that briefly.
Your problem for only one reason. That president raises a question. Who owns a land? The homeless. Our problem for only one reason. Our president raises a question. Who owns a land? Who owns the $2 million
of rule that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? Through my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me?
And welcome to your home away from home, Free Radio Santa Cruz's stream. I'll be with you for 2 and in the studio with me will be Dr. Mike, in case you have a medical emergency and you wish to call in to get some questionable pseudo-medical advice, although Dr. Mike is... He has his own wisdom, whatever his credentials. He keeps promising to send me details that he never does, or if he does, I keep losing them. So I haven't been able to check this man's background, but we're going to call his Arizona contacts and find out just what kind of a scam he's running here in Santa Cruz. And he's always promising to send it to me. We'll see if that ever happens. In any case, the call-in numbers here, in case you want to be part of the show, is 831-427-3772. There's actually only one number. The second number does not seem to be working. I don't know what that's all about, and I lack the technical expertise or the initiative to actually connect the other line, but that doesn't mean you can't try and call in on 427-3772 if you've got some stuff you want to pass on, if you have some comments on what you're hearing, if you have breaking news, which is always useful, though I guess if you're at a computer, unless you're seeing the police, beating people up in a McDonald's as they were doing to reporters in Ferguson, Missouri the other day, according to the Democracy Now! Report and a couple of and other reports from Reuters, that is, I'd definitely like to hear about that kind of stuff. I am going to be creating a flyer, which I'm going to pass on to folks who may be attending a number of events this weekend, which I'm going to mention to you all in case you want to go, because they're public events. It'll be an opportunity for you to pick up my flyer. I mean, that could be the most meaningful part of these events. They are a number of events around the shitty council race that's coming up in November for the Santa Cruz Shitty Council. That's three open seats for the council. And the people who are running, ostensibly on the left, and who are having kind of events this weekend, are Bruce Van Allen and Lainey Sherman, I believe her name is. I hope I don't get Lainey's name wrong. I haven't asked Bruce for his specifics on positions that he might have that we in Huff might be sympathetic to. I have asked Lainey about hers, and she has so far declined to be specific about her positions. But, you know, we're in August. The election is until November. But still, I'm surprised in the series of emails I've gotten, plus the one personal contact I had with her on Sunday at the mime troupe last Sunday, what the problem is there. I don't know why. I guess... Yeah, I don't know. I kind of suspect I know what the problem is. And I suspect the problem is that politicians don't want to go on the record about issues that might cause one group of constituents to not like them, and perhaps even though another might want to have them go on the record on these issues. So the kind of issues that Huff is concerned about are things like the old staples, the right of homeless people to engage in survival behavior such as sleeping, urinating and defecating in bathrooms preferably, but if they can't find them, not being arrested for doing what they need to do, ending the criminalization of the homeless, which takes the form of stuff like tickets and citations and arrests for consuming alcohol, not being drunk, but consuming alcohol, or even carrying an open bottle. Of course, the entire drug war is something that homeless people find themselves on the forefront of, first of all, because they're out there and they're the most vulnerable population, the first people the police encounter, and then second of all, because they are more likely to self-medicate than people who are indoors, because they have more pressure on themselves than those who are indoors. If you have a house or if you have a roof over your head and you're able to spend 80% of your time struggling to pay the rent but still have that bed to lie down in at night, then you may have less cause to shoot up with this or that or have to toke out constantly or, you know, get drunk, whatever is, you know, the... Or chain smoke. Studies by established researchers have acknowledged, even to the satisfaction of such right-wing council people as Pamela Comstock, that homeless people smoke at a rate that is 3.5 times that, 4 times that of the housed or general population, which includes both homeless and housed. So it's like 17% smoke who are indoors or general population, including everybody, and 71% or 70% of the homeless smoke cigarettes. Anyway, these ordinances are used to criminalize, and the question is, how do city council candidates stand on these issues? You have the rare city council candidate like Steve Plaich, who was a city council candidate but has bowed out of the race, who repeatedly at least took a strong stand around the sleeping ban, for which he is to be commended, and which he says he's going to be presenting publicly, not on his own behalf, but on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union's local chapter, of which he is vice chair, at the Tuesday Board of Supervisors, or Stupid Vipers meeting, as I like to call them in my adolescent fashion, perhaps. I don't know. In any case, they meet on Tuesday, and I believe the ACLU, I'm told, will be making a presentation urging the county to abandon its anti-homeless ordinances, specifically the anti-lodging law, 647E. Actually, it's not as broad as abandon all the anti-homeless ordinances. I think Plaich's ACLU is only asking that they, at this particular point, abandon the camping ordinance, and only for a limited period of time, and only at night. So it is a limited request. Let's restore civil rights a little bit and see if it hurts the economy. That kind of half-assed approach I have a lot of moral contempt for, but it's supposed to be politically savvy, and I suppose that's why we should, any step forward, baby steps, all these little excuses that justify not going to the principle of the thing, but suggesting some half-assed measure that gets partway is, I suppose it takes a little bit of pressure. Well, it's not going anyway at the moment, the problem is. It's simply a recommendation. But it'll be happening at the Board of Supervisors if Steve Plaich comes through and his ACLU board comes through, as I suspect they will, Tuesday, and I believe 9 o'clock. And I believe some Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom members will also be there giving out flyers and making their own statements about the issue. That's at the Oral Communications Period on the fifth floor of the county building. 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. Let's see, today is the 14th, so it would be the 19th, I guess, if I'm not mistaken. Then there's some other things happening this weekend. On Saturday, there's an event coming up, as I putter around to find the exact details here. It's apparently slightly buried in my computer, but I will find it by cracky. Here it is. No, not quite. But there is an event that is a... I suppose it's really a benefit for Laney Sherman. But what it actually is billed as is some kind of civil liberties affair that is open to the public. And that is happening on Saturday at 1 o'clock. And I'm going to give you the exact address. It's at the house of Attorney Ben Rice. Ben's house is the only house in Santa Cruz that I've ever been physically thrown out of. But that was 20 years ago. And Ben and I have been on, I think, better terms since. Though one can never tell, you know, what actually is happening. And until one gets into the situation, the actual... Wow. I thought I had the right file here. I think I do somewhere. Ben, the address of this event is... Coming up shortly... I see it appearing before me. 109 Lisa Court. And I got to tell you, I have absolutely no idea where that is. But if you want, you can find 109 Lisa Court, either online or by going to your friendly gas station or something. And at 1 o'clock on the 16th, which is 2 days from now, you can wander into Laney's event. And that event, again, and I'll read you specifically what I was told. And yes, one wonders why I haven't prepared all this before the show. I often wonder that myself. But what have I got here? I'm going to have to do it from memory because the notes that I thought I had have disappeared. It's a celebration of civil liberties, and maybe actually it can be found online under that title, The Celebration of Civil Liberties. I'm going to take another look here and see if I can find it. Let's see if... Laney herself has it on her Facebook page. That could be helpful. Dr. Mike is trying to get me as sick as possible by coughing every 3 or 4 seconds, but luckily you're insulated from his homeless ailments. Could be allergies, I suppose. He thinks it's perhaps he's allergic to me. It's possible. I know I'm becoming more allergic to... well, perhaps not. Let's see. Well, let's see. The Facebook page for Leone. I wonder if it's under her name. I think we'll have to come back to this. On Sunday, there is another event. Bruce Van Allen, another candidate I mentioned before, formerly a mayor of Santa Cruz 43 years ago, back in 19... 81, 82, somewhere around there. He was one of the first so-called progressives elected, along with Mike Rotkin, when Rotkin billed himself as a progressive. He probably still does. And he often claims, or when I or has claimed, that he is the only mayor that has ever opposed the sleeping ban explicitly, which isn't true. Celia Scott opposed the sleeping ban. She was a mayor in the 80s. I'm not sure how intensely she opposed it, but she came out against it, and also generally in favor of classic liberal civil liberties positions, like she was against the youth curfew. She was against, I think, the curfew in the parks or on the riverbank. She was concerned with a number of things. I don't know if she opposed the shoulder tap law, which made it illegal for you to tap the shoulder of a person and ask them to buy you booze if you were underage. Is that what it was? Or did it make the I know it would be illegal for the person to supply you with liquor if you were under 18. Or is it under 21? I'm not sure these
under
days.
21.
Under 21, thanks. In any case, Bruce Van Allen's event is from 1 to 3, and it's in Harvey West on Sunday. You could go there. And that's going to be at Harvey West's Freedom Plaza Park Pool. I'm not sure, but it's at Harvey West Park. So go over there and check it out. And then on Monday, there is a forum run by the so-called People's Democratic Club, which is usually a hack group of right-wingers with Democratic Party labels who usually endorse the most conservative candidates or have in the past often endorsed conservative candidates. They have a forum at the Loudon Nelson Center from 7 to 9 on Monday night. And so, again, Saturday, it's Laney's Affair out at Ben Rice's house at 109 Lisa. Sunday, it's Bruce Van Allen's Affair from 3 to 5 out at Harvey West. Monday, it's a whole forum with all the city council candidates, and I guess there aren't that many of them, but none of them look particularly appealing to me, but who knows? Maybe there'll be some surprises, and that's going to be at Loudon Nelson at 7 to 9. And Tuesday at 9 o'clock, Board of Supervisors, ACLU Vice Chair Steve Plaich or some other rep from the local American Civil Liberties Union will be presenting the camping ban moratorium, they call it, at night throughout the city and county that they are requesting. So you might want to check these events out. I will also be creating a series of questions for the candidates, which watch them squirm, or rather watch their handlers avoid the questions, because, for example, at this People's Democratic Forum, you will not be able to ask questions directly from the audience. You will have to write them on a 3x5 card, hand them to one of the monitors, and then the wise and great minds who select these cards will decide which questions are relevant to the candidates. You know, your question may show up, and you can always stand up and shout your question, and that, of course, unlike at the city council, you're unlikely to be thrown out, though you will probably be shushed if you do. But democracy, to be vital, has to be transparent and open. And questions that are not being asked have to be asked, even if we get past the gatekeepers and guardians that stop the questions from being asked. So, that's happening. Also coming up next week on the 20th, on Wednesday, the very next day, at 8:15 in the morning, is a hearing for the Santa Cruz 11. And this brings me to a sort of an update on what happened on Wednesday yesterday, on the 13th, which wasn't much, but I wrote about it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, in case you want to check out Indie Bay. A news site that I often write on. The specifics are that Santa Cruz 11, of course, are Occupy activists who are being prosecuted mercilessly years later at costs of several $100,000 to essentially powder the crooked face of the police department and the DA's office, who are scapegoating a few people for actions around a still-vacant Wells Fargo-leased bank building at 75 River Street that was somewhat vandalized. You know, it was, nothing was demolished inside. I believe that there was graffiti, some furniture was broken, there may have been some more damage. Wells Fargo provided an outrageously padded bill, somewhat reduced by the court, but that came to, I think, $23,000, and that's what DA Bob Lee is trying to squeeze out of the remaining four defendants. And so in response, after Lee tried to, and apparently maybe as successfully, recused or retired Judge Burdick from the proceedings, although he may not have. That's another question that is sort of lingering in the air that I haven't gotten a clear answer to yet. Paul Burdick was not the judge who heard matters on Wednesday, this yesterday. It was another judge, Steve Siegel, who maybe more actually, well, 20 years ago, he gave more liberal decisions than almost any other judge. The trouble is that liberals in positions, he wasn't a judge then, though, he was a commissioner. Liberals, when they get into positions of power, in order to prove that they are worthy of power, often veer strongly to the right. Some of them don't, which is good, but many of them do. And I don't know, I haven't been examining Siegel's record, so I can't tell you where he's at. Perhaps other people can. Again, I remind you, the call-in number here is 427-3772. Santa Cruz 11, he took the case, the arguments in his court yesterday were around the issues raised by attorney Alexis Briggs, who's attorney for one of the final four, as we call them, at the Santa Cruz 11, Cameron Lorando. And here, the accusation here is that they, not that they vandalized the building, but that they were present in the building when sometime during that period vandalism occurred, and so their presence aided and abetted it, and therefore they face 4 years in prison each for that, and a $23,000 fine. Restitution fine. And I think this has been going on for several years. The prosecution has failed to provide a lot of the video and the documentation around this that was demanded. And now they're still having problems. One attorney, Jesse Rubin, who's attorney for Frank Alcantara, also previously known as Angel, I believe he's now calls himself Frank, is requesting a lot more information about that than is yet being provided. And those issues are going to come up a week from Wednesday on the 27th, as well as the issue of if the DA's office is going to be taken off the case, which I think is about as likely as snow in June. But nonetheless, a case is being made for that issue, because D.A. Bob Lee did receive a loan from Wells Fargo Bank for $34,000. I was saying $30,000, but apparently the records show it's $34,000 if my reading of them is correct. And the issue is going to be, is that all the money he got? And the issue that came up yesterday in court, which I didn't attend, but I heard about from two different sources, including the attorney Alexis Briggs via email, was that the attorney for Wells Fargo and the county council who's handling the case for the DA, because the DA is himself now a party to this. The DA has become the defendant in a certain sense, because the DA is being accused of being biased, or at least having the appearance of partiality, because of this $34,000 loan that was made to the election campaign of District Attorney Bob Lee. And so the issue then is that was discussed yesterday was the county council wants more time to bring the documents, because Alexis Briggs wants not just the election contributions, but all contributions from Wells Fargo to the personal accounts of D.A. Bob Lee, and county council doesn't want to do that, and so there's going to be a decision on the 27th, I believe, or maybe the documents have already been ordered to be shown on the 27th. I'm a little unclear on that, as you can see. I wish I had more accurate information, but that's sort of what's happening. Dr. Mike, you say you have some thoughts or some points?
Well, you left out the fact that he didn't declare the fact that he got $34,000 when he was going up for election. He didn't declare that. And the other thing that you left out is there...
Well, he did declare it. It was on the election forms he filed with the county.
Oh, he did?
Yes. No,
oh.
But the issue was, mm-hmm. before he took on the case, did he declare to the judge, I received $34,000 in my election campaign, even yeah. though it was on a form, yeah. it would be probably more appropriate for him to have said, I did get $34,000 from Wells Fargo, but I don't think it's going to influence me because it was only a loan, and I'm not sure if he's paid it back or not.
So the two points on that is, it's obviously he knew he got the loan. It's not like something that dropped out of his memory. And then secondly, why did he not declare that purposely?
Well,
was there a reason for that?
Well, I think these politicians are arrogant. I don't think he feels he had any need to declare it. I think he felt that no one was going to raise it because it isn't, you know, it doesn't necessarily show he's biased. I mean, anybody can get a loan and pay it back. He's the prosecutor. His job is to prosecute a variety of cases. And I guess his perspective, according to the Sentinel article the next day, I think it was today, maybe it was yesterday, that was that it was kind of silly for him to have to even get into this because... it didn't have anything to do with his prosecution. And that may well be true, but the question is, what about the appearance of it? And I think one of the reasons this issue came up at all is because DA Bob Lee tried to disqualify Judge Paul Burdick previously, about some months ago, because Burdick has dismissed the charges against 7 of the Santa Cruz 11 by claiming that there's inadequate evidence. There's no evidence to go beyond the preliminary hearing, but this has to be said that Burdick did this after a year in my case. I was one of the Santa Cruz 11, and he did it after endless findings and admonitions to a then assistant district attorney and the only attorney on the case under Bob Lee, Rebecca Young, to bring in the damn videotapes that she claimed that she had brought in or that she had made available in another machine or that the dog ate. And that she had numerous excuses, one after another. The dog, actually. There's no dogs except perhaps all of them in the DA's office. But in any case, Burdick is no big friend of the defendants, in my view. And I've talked about that on the air before. But for DA Bob Lee, he wanted to get rid of Burdick because Burdick was unable to, you know, give him the shining convictions or at least trials that he wanted. I suspect Burdick is going to still send, if he's still on the case, and it's not clear if he is or if Siegel has taken over, he's still going to take these four to trial. And that is disgraceful, abusive, waste of time and money, and more important, chilling to the entire activist community. I've been arrested perhaps a dozen more times in Santa Cruz. I've been in court and tried probably about a dozen times. I've never been found guilty of a misdemeanor in a Santa Cruz court. I think at one point... they offered us, if time served, if you plead, we'd set up a food operation outside a food court in order to dramatize the hunger situation in Santa Cruz for the homeless, and they arrested us for not having a permit. And there may have been, at that point, I'm not sure if it was a no contest plea or some such thing, but generally speaking, and I've never actually lost a trial in Santa Cruz. That I've been to. Now, it is also true for those who remember the mock Nazi salute case, they might think because I didn't, the mayors did not have to pay for false arrest that I lost that trial. And I did in that sense, but that was a civil trial that had to do with our suing the city for abuses. And it's too bad we lost that trial. And that trial, to be honest, is still on appeal. And there's, I would say, a fart's chance in hell of getting getting a retrial. That's the best we're going to get, which is a horror to think about. It will be another round with Fitzmaurice and Crone in San Jose in federal court. However, go, if you're interested, next Wednesday, after you've gone to all these things over the weekend, and check out the court. That's going to be at 8:15 in the morning in Department 6, and you'll find out whether Siegel is there. The attorney Alexis Briggs will be there. And then on the 27th, you can go again. There's also a a Friday event on the 14th, which is a parade that will be held. And I'm catching some signals from Dr. Mike.
Who's,
this is kind of my coach. He's off to the side.
Yeah,
he's trying to
remind you of that.
You want to remind me, there is a parade in support of the Santa Cruz 11. And that, I believe, is next Friday. I should say not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. And that is
4 p.m., I think.
4 p.m. and at the Saturn, right behind the Saturn Cafe parking lot in downtown Santa Cruz, if you know where that is. And it's also going to be ballyhooed a bit. You can wear your I Was in the Building t-shirt, support the Santa Cruz 11, which I see on Dr. Mike here, who wasn't in the building. He's a liar and a coward. He wasn't even in town. How could he be in the building? But I think occupying vacant buildings is a virtuous, not criminal. And I commend it, particularly when there are buildings of massive fraudulent banksters like Wells Fargo. In the middle of the winter, when such buildings need to be occupied. So, you know, it's too bad this whole thing has been turned around by some people who worship at the shrine of banks' private property. And keep saying, oh, then you're going to raid my house next if you take over their building. You know, well, no, I don't think so. And if people don't understand the difference between these two things, I kind of... It pisses me off, but I think I should pity them. Mike?
Yeah, and I think it's the only court case that's dragging on from Occupy Movement 3 years ago. And, of course, you would have to be in Santa Cruz with the caliber of lawmakers we have here.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know if the lawmakers have much to do with it. I think it's probably the... police and the district attorney's office that actually have the real say here in terms of what's happening. So, what have I got here? I've gotten already 40 minutes into the show, and we've gotten a long monologue. Maybe we should do a brief bit of listening to other people's voices, or at least a second person's voice. I believe we're going to tune into an interview. Well, let me see where we are, and then I will tell you where we're at.
August 10th, 2014. It's about 20 to 2 on Pacific Avenue, actually, in the New Leaf Market fenced-in area. I'm talking with
Superlex.
Superlex, you have your guitar here, and you're about to do some musicking.
I was actually going to just play a recording that I had, just because it's too loud down here anyways.
Okay.
It might be too loud for the recording, too. You never know.
You're competing with amplified sound over here.
Yeah,
so.
I know. I believe the song's called Traffic Jam or so. That's the band.
Sample of the music of
Superlex.
I would say first prize for most inaudible, off-key, and unintelligible music yet played in the last month on my show. But I guess it's a testament to either my lack of selectivity or my democratic nature. We can say one or the other. However, what I think is really more pertinent... What I want to play, actually, I think we're in the right spot. Let's find out. Let's try this.
Well, it's about 3:15 on August 13th, 2014. We have a chunky ranger giving a citation to someone in the park. and then smelling the bottle that he is, has nearby, or the plastic bottle. And it's a beautiful day. This is out in Ocean Park. And they're being instructed to leave. Looks like it could be a open container in the park ticket, perhaps. I don't know. And I'm told the ticket is for alcohol in the park. Sorry?
What'd you say?
I said I'm told the ticket is for alcohol in the park. No drinking on the job, officer.
I think it was the point at which this park ranger person, a woman, took a drink of water, or maybe she smelled the bottle that the guy she was ticketing, because she was writing out a ticket when I came up to her. And I'm not sympathetic to this kind of stuff. The guy was somewhat tanked, and I suspect it was really alcohol. But it was a sunny day. He was lying there, not bothering anyone. And it's... to me, it's clearly class legislation when poor people are not allowed to drink, but wealthy people are in downtown venues. And it's just another tool that police use. In fact, not just that they use to harass the homeless, but they're instructed to use. And so they may personally not even want to do it, but they are kind of, like they're wound up and set out like these zombie police to go out there and issue these citations or warnings. This guy, who also got a stay-away order from the park without even being convicted of anything, though he was likely, I think he was probably guilty of at least having an open container, maybe consuming alcohol in the park. It's possible. But, in fact, he didn't seem unable to take care of himself, though he was a little stumbly and slow about getting his card back in his wallet and so forth. There were a variety of people in the park, and you'll hear me mentioning this, and they were all people with backpacks and blankets who had the appearance of people who live outside, and they were all looking probably for a place to take a goddamn rest during the day when at least the act of resting itself is not technically illegal in a park. But this ranger was hovering over them and moving around them the whole time, and here's some more from that incident. This was, I guess this was yesterday that this happened, the 13th of August.
Well, sorry that you got the ticket, man. I don't look like you were bothering anybody. And he's also been given an order to leave, part of the 24-hour stay-away stuff from the park. A lot of people are lying here in the park trying to relax, sort of in a semicircle around the park. And
just a comment again, which I've done endlessly on this 24-hour stay-away stuff. He has not been convicted or even charged with anything. He's been written a citation, and yet this... police state law passed by the city council, supported by Don Lane, and I think Micah Posner supported part of it. I don't know if he supported this part or not. I think he did. He said he trusted his park rangers. That was what I remember from Micah Posner's comments. I mention this because some people continue to cling to the illusion that Micah Posner is some kind of a liberal in a sea of conservatism or a sea of bigotry. What he is, in fact, is he's a politician who's scrambling to find a purchase where he can persuade the other bigots to accept some of his stuff in terms, in return for which he will keep a low profile on other matters, which is a devil's bargain, as far as I'm concerned. So there is a law that if you I think it's unconstitutional because it's really punishment pre-trial. You won't that a cop or a ranger, and maybe even a private security guard, can, after giving you a citation, direct you to leave the park for 24 hours. Which may mean, you know, you can't have a place to sleep, because you can't at least in that park area. And there's a limited number of parks in town. Increasingly limited because middle-class soccer moms and others who want to reserve these areas exclusively for people who don't look homeless have really kind of put people into a intensified police surveillance of the parks through their neighborhood sort of quasi-fascist groups. And the reason I use those loaded terms is because I think the connection of a community neighborhood watch with the police department in an agenda against lower-income people and driving them away is fascist. I suppose fascism may give lower-class people more opportunity if they want to join the military or the police, and it may even put some people to work as part of a national effort to ultimately engage in military aggression abroad, which is what the U.S. seems to be doing in terms of at least maintaining its grip throughout the world by funding there are now 1,000 U.S. troops in Iraq today. The civil war in Syria that has produced the power for ISIS came from U.S. intervention in large part. Of course, in Kiev, and I should say in Ukraine, the U.S. and other Western powers promulgated a coup that overturned or supported the forces that overturned a kleptocratic government that was nonetheless elected, and although I'm not a big fan of elections, instituted a government that has self-declared fascists in positions of authority there, and that is, and then that are now, you know, bombing and burning people in eastern Ukraine, and also fomenting essentially a war against Russia, or let's say putting Russia in a position where it either constricts itself and allows for NATO forces closer and closer to its borders, or it has to, you know, we face the possibility of armed conflict. So, that's all about the 24-hour stay-away order in the parks that I think is an example of the militarization downtown. But the militarization can be seen much more directly, and I saw it yesterday, with this ranger just hovering around the park with no particular crime there, just looking for something among this group of about... They weren't even a group. They were people spread out all over the park in a kind of a broad semicircle. You'll hear me describe this later in the tape. About 12 people. There was a couple who were embracing. There was another couple lying there in the sun. And I found it ominous. It has to be said also that one of the people that I interviewed, and you'll hear her later, the interview began because she told me she liked this ranger. She thought this ranger was a good person. And thought, you know, really appreciated her, I don't know, how the relationship the two of them had. My response often to that is, people wearing these uniforms who are engaged in these kinds of activities, however good a person they are essentially consumed, contaminated, and jacketed by the functions that they have to perform. And therefore, it does no good to say, oh, that's a good ranger. You know, it's like saying, oh, that's a good Nazi. You know, I mean, there were good Nazis. There really were. I'm sure there were. You know, and but the fact is, if you're a part of this machine, you have to follow the orders of the machine. You know, or you don't keep your job. And you also, it's a matter of a certain amount of a kind of a sick kind of integrity. You agree to certain things when you join these organizations. Let's hear some more.
Amanda's going to just relax and get some rest. That's what's happening in Loudoun Park. You have a good one. Did she ticket you too or not? Did she tell you to leave too? Good. But did she ticket you today? No.
No.
Same thing, having a bottle or something? But nobody was causing any trouble, right? Okay.
And that was a fellow who was lying next to the guy who was given the ticket for either open container or consuming alcohol in the park or possessing alcohol in the park. It was never clear to me. But he apparently got a similar ticket on another day, and he was told to stay away from the park on another day.
There you go. Take care. And we have a couple fondly embracing in the park, and a park ranger looking on as though they're about to take some kind of action. It's actually, could be a very intense back rub. Seems to be stalking around on her bike, looking over the 10 people, all of whom look to be trying to rest. They're apparently homeless, have bikes and possessions with them. So I'm back here in the park about 3:40, waiting for my car to meet the tow man. And the park ranger is still lingering around this. I wouldn't call them a group of people, but a number of people in a very broad semicircle are laid out, trying to rest on blankets and sleep during the day. So we're talking with
Karina.
Karina, we're here. Having a pleasant day in the park. This is and you're kind of comfortably laid out and on a blankie with a friend. What? You come here often?
Yeah, I do, because it's a way to relax and play my games and read my book and meet my daughter and my grandchild. And I actually just got two pieces of yellow paper last night.
Meaning two citations?
Correct.
From what, some of the friendly rangers that you've been praising? Or?
No, these are not rangers, they're PD.
And what did the PD want with you?
They were camping. Tickets.
Meaning survival sleeping?
Correct.
So they don't want you
We went to one place, and then we took the ticket, and then we went to another place, and the same cop gave us another ticket.
Who was the cop?
You know what? I don't know. If I look at my ticket, I could probably tell you, but I usually just stuff it in my bag, so I don't know.
Now, if you have a ticket handy, let me know. I'd be curious, because it sounds... Did the officer seem to be following you, or do you just happen to run into...
I don't know if it was coincidental or if he was following. I don't know.
How far away was the first spot from the second?
Probably maybe 2 blocks.
And was this downtown, or was this out in the outskirts?
Kind of outskirts of downtown. Yeah, just down the street.
And have you gotten camping tickets before?
Yes, I have.
And how much of a camp criminal are you?
Well, I guess I'm a notorious camp criminal.
Or well-known notorious?
Well, no, I don't know if I'm well-known. They don't know my name yet. Yet.
Indeed. How many citations would you say you've gotten?
I'd probably have to say over 5.
There is a rather nasty law that says if you get more than 3 and you don't attend to them in court, every subsequent citation could be treated as a misdemeanor, meaning up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine. So, watch out.
That, I think that's totally wrong.
And you got it.
And because I have not committed any crimes. And I think that they should go after people who are actually really committing crimes. I don't hurt anybody. If anybody I hurt, it's just myself. I don't do drugs. I don't do anything like that. And I think that they assume because I'm on the streets that I do. But they shouldn't assume that. You know, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, and I just, you know, I'm trying to get by. And this happens to be my circumstances right now. You know, I mean, I raised my daughter here, my grandson's here, I've had a career here, I've not been out here that long. You know, there's a certain kind of freedom being out here, because, you know, it's just like, you know, you don't have to pay anything right off the bat, whatever. But, you know, but I've always lived life in a right way or manner, and... I don't know. I don't know. I think it's wrong.
I agree with you, and I'm. But on the other hand, you feel more positively inclined toward park rangers, who
well, this one park ranger who's relatively close by on the sidewalk on her bicycle. She's already given a citation and a stay-away order to one guy over here for an open container, I think it was. But you yourself have never been hassled by rangers?
No. No, I haven't because I don't. I mean, and I can't blame her because she's doing her job. I mean, if someone's sitting out in the open drinking a bottle of liquor, I don't blame her for giving them a ticket. You know, I mean, I have kids. So, you know, it's like, you know, I don't want them wandering around running into bottles of liquor.
Well, you know, the same arguments are used about you criminal sleepers who are sleeping in the neighborhoods, frightening the children, a menace to our society.
Right, correct. I hear what you're saying. I hear where you're coming from. But it's, I don't understand why that's illegal.
Yeah, well, I don't understand why having an open container is illegal unless you're drunk and can't take care of yourself.
Right, right. I agree with that.
I mean, you know, people with money can get themselves sloshed sitting in the cafes outside, but if you don't have any money and you carry around a container and you're completely sober, it's illegal to have an open container, even if in your own campsite.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that it should be that way because, you know, even like we're planning on going to see the Goonies, the movie tonight, and you have all these tourists that go around just like having their bottles all over the place. And who do they really, you know, knock down? Are just like, you know, the people around who are locals who may, might recognize and be like, you know, no, you can't. But certain people can.
Certain people who have money can.
Right.
We've been talking with
Karina.
Thanks, Karina. Anything you want to add?
I think I'm good now. Thank you.
Thank you. So, a ranger stroller, I just passed by, the female ranger on her bike, who was keeping an eye on the park people, and who our previous speaker actually began by commending. She said she really liked her and had never been ticketed by her. It was the reason I initially noted what was happening in the park, because she was giving a ticket, of course, to a fellow who never communicated with me much, but he was not only a man with an open container, but he was pretty evidently drunk.
So, something coming up on Saturday, but I'm not finding a lot of information on, is an Occupy Action at the Oakland Docks, and Mike, maybe you know something about that. Are you?
Yes. The only thing I know is that there's a ship coming from Israel. I'm not sure. I think it's just a regular commercial ship, as far as I know. And they're meeting. Anybody who wants to go up there, meeting on Saturday morning. I suppose it's Sunday morning. Saturday.
Well, I'm going to read this, Mike. You're not absolutely in touch with it.
Sure.
On Saturday, August 16th, reads Indy Bay, at 5 a.m., port workers, activists, and average citizens will gather at West Oakland BART and march to Berth 57 in the Port of Oakland to block Israeli Zim ships from being unloaded. And KPFA will be there broadcasting live to you. You could tune in at 8:30 a.m. for a live broadcast from the Port of Oakland. Also watch a video stream at kpfa.org. So that's fine. You can sit in your ass at home and do nothing while other people, you know, get their asses arrested or face possible arrest. Mm-hmm. That's probably what I'll be doing. I'm trying to see if there's any more details about this particular situation.
Detail,
go ahead.
The one detail I want to add is they're meeting outside the on Water Street, I believe, or Ocean Street, in, outside the county building, somewhere in that area.
But you don't know when or where.
Yeah,
or,
3 o'clock. 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. What time? What day?
On Saturday morning.
3 a.m. You mean?
Yes. Yes.
I
yes.
See.
Anyone can go there and get a ride.
So at 3 a.m. in the morning, if you go to the county building, is that right?
Yeah, I believe it's around there. I'm not exactly sure. I think it's outside the county building, or else it could be in the street. But if you go there, you'll see people there. It's at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's pretty early. So it means you gotta get up early, get to bed early, whatever.
So that's apparently an option. It looks like... Looking online to see if there's any more specifics about this. There is a story by Alex DeRosi. Santa Cruz activists have protested regularly since the assault on Gaza began. And I have to say, the assault on Gaza has produced massive numbers of homeless people, not to mention 2,000 deaths.
200,000 actually displaced from their homes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's relevant to those of us considering concern about homelessness generally. And, of course, the main point is that the U.S. weapons are being used to do this.
That is the main point. Without the money we give them, without the weapons we give them, none of this would be going on.
And, in fact, I think after the bombing of the second hospital or the second church, the second community center.
School,
was that what it was? Even Obama had to sort of say, tut, tut, you Israeli bombers, watch out. And that may have been responsible for the current ceasefire. Anyway, this story by Alex DeRosi, Santa Cruz activists have protested regularly. Fifth consecutive Monday evening protest held at the Santa Cruz town clock was August 11th, and presumably another one will be coming up on the 18th. Since Israeli began attacks on July 8th, a number of other demonstrations opposing Israeli attacks on the Palestinian people have been held in Santa Cruz as well, and community members continue to organize against the atrocities. On Saturday, some are making the trip up to Oakland Port early in the morning, is what you were saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mike, to help block the incoming Israeli Zim ship to prevent it from unloading its cargo, and another protest in Santa Cruz is planned for 1 p.m. at the town clock on Saturday. And they displayed the names of those killed in Gaza. Individuals held up signs with statements such as Hewlett-Packard profits from Israeli genocide in Gaza, let Gaza live, demand U.S. sanctions on Israel, want peace, demand U.S. sanctions on Israel. And I've suggested that the city council look into, I suggested this a decade ago about all war profiteering, but specifically about it divesting from those companies, if they are part of the portfolio of the Santa Cruz City Council, that are engaged in this. One sign read, "There is a solution, boycott, divestment, and sanctions." Described how products produced in Israel could be easily identified for boycott as they have the number 729 at the bottom of the barcodes on their packaging. The sign also displayed a small list of companies to boycott, which included Hewlett-Packard, Tribe All Natural Hummus, Johnson & Johnson, Victoria's Secret, Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, Motorola, SodaStream, Northrop Grumman, and Sabra. The campaign for boycotts, divestment, and sanctions is described on the website of the Palestinian BDS National Committee, wide coalition of the largest Palestinian organizations, trade unions, networks, and NGOs. The boycott calls for Israel to meet its obligations under international law by ending its occupation and colonization of all Arab lands occupied in June 1967 and dismantling the wall, recognizing the fundamental rights of the Arab-Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality, and respecting, protecting, and promoting the right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties as stipulated in UN Resolution 194. Whatever that may be.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem, because Murdoch and a lot of these highly financial people are investing in Israel, in it's seemingly the place to invest these days, and that's part of the problem, you know.
And I raised the issue about protesters who are on the median being criticized or ostracized or even fingered by the police or to the police by some of the more conventional protesters who are opposing the Gaza massacre. And that was a concern to me. I interviewed Keith McHenry on that issue on a previous show. And I also talked to both the other people involved, who I don't think want their names necessarily mentioned. And I understand one of them was rather outspoken around these issues. Though they're all pretty outspoken. I mean, I guess I faced the same kind of criticism when I was holding up a sign on the median. This protest happens regularly every Monday at the town clock. But there was also earlier protests on the 4th of July against Obama's warmongering last 4th of July, and I was out on the median at Ocean, and I was denounced by one of the protest organizers for engaging in illegal activities because, of course, the constitutional right to protest by holding a sign on the median has been made illegal in Santa Cruz. Instead of joining me, as she should, she didn't call the police, and it stopped after a while, unlike the things have gotten worse when they're actually calling the police. There's, you know, it's not good. We need to understand there are other issues here than, well, I mean, it's part of a broader issue. Unless you defend civil liberties at home, it doesn't do any good to rant and rave about things abroad. That's what I feel. I mean, so it's really a kind of a form of hypocrisy to be concerned about the Gaza massacre but not give a shit about what's happening to homeless people in Santa Cruz. Although I can understand it. I mean, it's, you know, nobody is, they are not shooting down homeless people directly as they were in Gaza and probably still are. Although there is a ceasefire. Anyway, so again, this thing is happening.
I have one final comment to make on that.
This thing is happening on Saturday morning at 3 a.m. if you're correct, Mike.
Yeah.
Go to the county building. You can join the caravan up to Oakland for the Oakland port occupation. Go ahead.
My comment is, wouldn't you think idiot Obama would wake up and not be feeding more money to the Israel country so they can invest more in guns? They just got an extra $220 million. They already get $3 billion of my, and some of my taxes they get given over there so they can buy the weapons from the United States. So actually the United States and Obama is largely responsible for what's going on in Palestine. So people listening to this, wake up. Do something about your government. Supporting these mass murderers over there?
Well, the government is a mass murderer in many places, and as long as it is empowered to do that, as long as we don't do anything, it will continue to do what it does. And I think it is. The large protests have an impact. It stopped the movement of, I wouldn't say it stopped the bombing of Syria, but there was proposed bombing of Syria by the U.S. back last year. I believe it was bombing. And U.S. intervention was dramatically opposed, and for the first time in some time, the U.S. was stopped from doing it by domestic opposition. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any opposition at all to the return to Iraq. And there is opposition to the Gaza massacres, but
all over the world, there's opposition.
In the United States. But I think that it isn't on the scale or with the persistence that yet that is likely to cause real change. But, you know, one can always sort of say, maybe so, down the road. Don't give up the ship. Do it if you can. Let's take a musical break and wait for the flood of phone calls that is due to come in shortly. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Let's hear an old favorite in somewhat newer garb.
Oh, I marched to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British War. Young land started growing, young blood started flowing. I'm marching anymore. For I've killed my share of Indians in a thousand different fights. I was there at the Little Big Horn. I heard many men lying, saw many more dying, but I ain't marching anymore. Well, it's always the old lead us to the war. stole California from Mexican land. Fought in the bloody Civil War. I even killed my brother, so many others. But I ain't marching anymore, for I marched to the battles of the German trench. In war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, now they want me back again. War. It's always the poor who die. Now look how far we've come with the saber and the gun. Tell me, was it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky. I set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning. That I ain't marching anymore, 'cause I saw into the hearts of the president's men. I saw money piled like bodies on the floor. I saw tears traded for diamonds, fears made for the buy-in.
And that's a shorter and updated version of I Ain't a Marchin' Anymore by Jefferson Starship from Jefferson's Tree of Liberty, which is itself growing a beard. It's been around, this was, I think this was a decade old. No date on here. Can't really tell. Anyway, I liked Oak's version, and I like this version, and I hope that actually people take it seriously. With me now, however, is that man about interviews, Dr. Mike, who's actually hopefully is going to play us a little something, which he got from the streets. But before he does, he'll give us a little introduction and talk about it.
Well, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. There's an artist downtown, Isabel. I forgot her last name now, but she's an excellent artist. You know, I'm an artist myself. I had exhibitions, so I'm in a position to basically judge art. And this is the best art I've seen in the whole of Santa Cruz since I came here several months ago. And this lady, not only that, but she's a very sensitive, a very beautiful, nice person. And she was severely harassed by 7 policemen, no less than 7, and maybe also 2 yellow jackets. And basically, her situation was I saw the stand. The stand conformed to the. It was made by a professional carpenter to conform to the 12. Is it 12 square feet? 12. Okay. But she she had one piece of art or some little piece of art sticking out a few inches further than it should be. And the police came along. It was initiated by what's that policeman that causes trouble down there a lot?
Barnett.
Yeah, exactly. And as far as I know, he was taken off Pacific Avenue for a certain period of time, but he looks like he's back on there again. And these police, forgive the word, but you know, ignorance is really the only word I can think about. When it comes to harassing these kind of people, these are positive, creative people, and the police are the very opposite. They're, in my mind, some of the police should be taken off the force.
Mike, forgive me for cutting through the commentary. Sure, sure. It's always, you know, I mean, what actually
disturbed me?
Did you actually observe something happen? Is this a second account that happened later?
This happened a couple of days ago. I'll let the girl talk for herself. That'll be the best thing.
Okay.
You know, it is disturbing to me. I have to confess, I'm a sensitive guy, And that's just the way it is. So
no, I'm
sorry. I apologize if I'm getting carried away.
No, you're not getting carried away. I mean, but that's not.
You don't have to give your full name.
Again,
you can give your first name if you want, or whatever you feel comfortable with.
Okay, my name is Isabel Brenna.
Good. Okay, and this is going to be for the program that we have on the radio. It's to do with police brutality and police misbehavior. So we like to get it out to the public. Okay. So tell us your story. Start at the beginning.
Okay. Well, I am born and raised in Santa Cruz, and I am a painter. I'm an artist.
Yeah,
and
a good artist at that, may I say.
Thank you. I was down here in a legal space where you're allowed to be covering 12 square feet of cement, showing art, and I have a permit. I went to the city hall. I pay taxes on the art that I sell, and I was surrounded by 7 police officers while I was with my little girl, too, who's only 3 years old, and I was about maybe a half of a foot, maybe a foot, a little bit, a couple of paintings poking over the zone of over the 12 square feet, but it just seems to me like it would just take common sense, a little tiny bit of compassion, and just, you know, a humanistic quality. We're not heartless robots. I think that we're all human beings. And
exactly.
I know there is laws, but and I was maybe breaking the law a tiny bit, but it just seems ridiculous to have 7 police officers surrounding me. And then I was given a ticket. I think it's going to be around $400. And at the same time, when I was getting, when I was surrounded by the police officers, I got a call from a friend who had just got stabbed by a needle, like a hypodermic needle.
Friend of yours?
Yeah, on the beach.
Oh,
so there's needles all over on the beaches. There's needles found in my daughter's gymnastics class bathroom the other day. And I just see all this other stuff going on that seems to be calling for more concern than art being shown on the streets. And when the police surrounded me, many community members of many ages were all supportive, and some of them were arguing with the police, and all I could do was just cry because it seemed so sad that that's what this town has come to, being born and raised here.
Born and raised here?
Yeah.
How many police cars were there, actually?
Police cars, I don't know, because they came in walking.
Oh, they came walking. Did one call the other type of thing? Or how come 7 is a lot of police for a minor infraction like that? Such a stupid thing. How did 7 police officers arrive?
I'm pretty sure there was 7. And there was also 2, I think they're called yellow jackets.
That's right. As well? 7?
That's
9? That's 9?
I think there was about that. I mean, it was kind of a blur. There maybe was 6. I think that at one point there was 7.
Yeah, we just had one lady walk by here, and she's coming back later, and she was one of the ones that was arguing on behalf with the police, right?
And there were many people. She was one of maybe the little bit, you know, she was raised her voice a little bit more than others, but there was, you know, there were senior citizens, there was high school students, there was people coming and talking to the police and trying to explain that this isn't right. They're picking on the wrong person. There's, you know, there's probably like meth being sold 10 feet from where I'm selling my art, and I'm doing something that's actually a free entertainment for the downtown.
Of
I mean,
course.
people were
your
telling,
art is beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you. And I mean, I come out here and if I get lucky, I sell some prints or I sell paintings, but really it's like, it's an enriching experience for people that come to downtown, is what I've been told.
Yeah, absolutely. If it was tacky art or something, we'd be on a different page. But this is professional art, very beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's where the common sense would come in, where I understand why they need to have certain laws, but they can tell when somebody is being professional and doing their best to follow all their ridiculous rules, which they put so many rules and laws that it's pretty much impossible to be able to show art. You're only allowed to stay for 1 hour in the spot that you're in. And with me, all my paintings are canvas, oil on canvas.
It's a lot of work to move all your paintings because they're on a stand here.
It's pretty much almost impossible for me to do it by myself, because I would have to leave some art unattended while I bring the other art down 100 feet from where
I'm. Have you ever been harassed about? Have you ever been told to move on or to move away or every hour? Have you
yeah.
ever had
oh,
that experience?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I have a good friend who's an artist who's gotten tickets.
Because I thought that rule was mainly for negative people who have don't project a good image or are not professional artists or not professional in any way. I thought they don't enforce that rule, but I'm wrong, obviously.
Yeah, they do enforce that rule. Unfortunately, they're very strict about it, and you have to move more than 100 feet every hour, but there's very, very, very few places that are actually legal to even set up your art.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if the community expresses their appreciation for your art and expresses the their opinion of you. They don't want... I mean, I've had people go up to the police and say, please don't make her move. This is wonderful for the community.
Yeah.
We want this. Please don't harass her.
I don't think the level of consciousness of the police can appreciate this art, the beauty and the excellent. I don't think they have capacity to do that. You know?
My friend said that it's like the brighter you shine, the more they want to put out the fire. It's like
there you go. The brighter you shine, the more you're attacked by these police. These low level police of low level consciousness. Correct. I agree with that.
I agree that it's a low level of consciousness. I mean, when I was attacked by the 7 police, I wasn't even allowed to talk. I tried to express a few opinions, and I wasn't even allowed to have an opinion.
Yeah. That's why they used to refer to the police as pigs, because their behavior is like pigs. They have no... In your case, they wouldn't even let you speak. You know, they're so in love with their own authority.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be some sort of a power trip, and I would definitely say that even more than pigs, it's like a weird, heartless robot, kind of a machine-like things walking along on the street here, which it's weird. It's very interesting.
Absolutely.
And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
It is, and it's destructive to the town of Santa Cruz, as far as I can tell. I can understand if somebody's drunk or somebody's putting forward negative vibrations, right. But in your case, you are obviously a professional, and your art is presented in that way. All right, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
We'll give you a card here. I'll give you a card and let you...
And that will go on the radio?
Yeah. And it will be recording. Hold on a second. It's still... All right, just whatever you saw. It's recording now, and what's your name? You can give.
My name is Brianna Brewer.
It just happened. This happened a couple of days ago, but just as I was talking to the artist, the girl who confronted the police happened to walk by, and I said to her, call in on your way back, wherever she was going, because I want to get your opinion about the incident that happened. She was there, and she was one of the people who confronted the police about their behavior, okay? And here's her talk. She just gave you her name there. Something.
Brewer, go ahead.
You witnessed an incident here on the street on Pacific. Can you give us, in your own words,
what
happened?
Well, I was leaving the farmer's market, and I looked over at the corner that I had seen this girl selling her paintings on before I went to the market. And when I came back out of the market, I saw these cops harassing her, and I saw Barnett writing her a ticket. And I immediately just started yelling, police harassment, and started kind of speaking up for her, and I started drawing attention very vocally to the fact that this was happening to her, and I started yelling at the tourists, come here, come this way to see your police harassment. Is this what you come to Santa Cruz to see? And some weird kid was like, maybe he's helping her, and I was like, yeah, that's what he's using that ticket book to do. So... You know, that's basically what I saw, but we were in a hurry. We had this, like, obligation to go sailing with his dad, so we were, like, rushing out of there a little faster than we needed to, so I didn't see anything else after that, but I did put in my voice to the community about how I felt about this happening.
Did you see many police around?
Yeah. Well, I saw, you know, Baker, and I saw Barnett, and they had a third female officer with them. I saw three cops, and they were really close and just kind of hovering over her and encroaching upon her unnecessarily. And, yeah, it was just the same old thing that I keep seeing in this town, harassment of people who are, you know, just artistic or creative or less fortunate, you know, like, really just not okay. It's not okay. That's all okay. I can really say.
That's
about
great.
It.
And what's your name again?
Brianna Brewer.
Brianna Brewer. Thank you, Brianna. And was there other people shouting too, or were you the only one?
Oh, no, no, no. I was pretty much the only one.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks again. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Mike.
We want this here. The community wants.
So, interesting, Mike. Brianna Brewer, of course, has been on the show a number of times. She plays downtown, or did, until she was kind of driven away. She got into a... she was harassed by one of the hosts and attempted to confront the host, and then she was taken to court on an issue of disturbing the peace. I'm not quite sure what the outcome of that. I think she did plead to something. And she did show up from the protests last fall against these very ordinances that Isabel is talking about. And I've left a message with Isabel. Maybe we can actually get her on the air to talk about this. It's a sad situation. It's a dangerous situation, because what you have here are police officers, again, who are wound up and then released to do their mechanical thing on Pacific Avenue, which is often inspired and heightened, which is often inspired and heightened by the fact that if people say, no, no, dude, this is bad, no, we're trying to, you know, have a community here, we're trying to have respect for rights. This police apparently are trained, or if they're not trained, they are behaving in a pack gang-like manner. I put in a Public Records Act request today to determine what kind of military equipment our police department has been getting over the last few years, and that I don't yet have any information on that, but within 10 days I should be getting some kind of info on that situation. The reason I'm asking that is because of the use of very explicit use of military information by the police in Ferguson, Missouri, who probably for the fourth night are terrorizing the community there after they have shot dead and still, at least as of this afternoon, refused to identify the police officer who killed Mike Brown and also apparently shot another guy a couple of days ago. I mean, we've had a similar situation in Salinas recently. Santa Cruz police officers haven't shot anybody dead recently in our town, which is, you know, good news, but it's happened in the past. And the concern here is that with the increasing funding to the police department, the increasing authorization and enabling of this kind of pack mentality of police on Pacific Avenue and elsewhere, the assertion of power is a strong addiction. It is, most of us are often so powerless in our lives that when we're put into a situation where we are allowed to be powerful, and police officers are allowed to be powerful, where power to them means making other people shut up, making other people do what they say, and often abusing other people, humiliating other people unless they accept authority in the manner that a police officer wants them to. That's what we face increasingly on these streets downtown. I'm now going to turn to an interview I did on Sunday with the San Francisco Mime Troupe, which is held every year for usually one weekend. This weekend it was on Saturday and Sunday. I got to the Sunday show. I wasn't feeling too well, so I didn't really spend much time there. But I did interview Grant Wilson, who gave me this rather troubling story about how, for the first time, the Parks and Rec Department tried to stop the mime troupe from appearing. And I'm going to play it now.
Well, I'm here at the San Francisco Mime Troupe's second performance in Santa Cruz. It's Sunday, the 10th of August. You can hear them in the background. But one of the reasons the Mime Troupe has made it is because of the questionable efforts of what's your name, sir?
Grant Wilson.
Grant Wilson.
Yes.
Grant,
it's not really as a result of me. It actually was a number of people that found out 3 days before the Mime Troupe was about to perform that the Parks Department was threatening to revoke or not give the Mime Troupe the permit to perform in San Lorenzo Park, as they have. I mean, the Mime Troupe has performed in San Lorenzo Park for at least a dozen years, if not more. So
now, did they get a permit every time, or did they just show up?
No, they get a permit every time. They go through official channels. Myself and others in Santa Cruz, probably 15 years ago, lobbied the city council, the Parks Department. We put up money, assurance coverage, to basically show to the city and the Parks Department that it was actually a great asset to have free community theater in the parks.
And so there's been no problem up to now?
As far as I know. I think, as far as I know, yes. This is the first instance of this. And it's interesting, and I will just say this, that apparently the nuts and bolts of it is that the Mime Troupe stage is higher than 18 inches. And apparently with the city of Santa Cruz, there's something somewhere that says
they could fall off. They could hurt the audience.
Maybe so. Or themselves. But in any case, and the Mime Troupe's response to the city saying we may have to pull your permit.
Your stage is too high.
Yeah, it's higher than 18 inches, and apparently the backdrop was high too. The Mime Troupe's response was, well, we perform in public parks throughout California and the Bay Area. We have never had this problem before. We are insured for $2 million. Is that enough?
Uh-huh.
And the third thing is actually no person outside of the Mime Troupe ever steps on the stage. But apparently, because maybe Santa Cruz is special.
Special.
The
cluttering up the park.
Maybe, I don't know. In any case, that was not enough. And so the Mime Troupe actually had to hire, a civil engineer to go drive to Oakland, that's where they were performing earlier this week, measure the stage, do a whole assessment of the technical aspects of the stage, and send that to the Parks Department, which the Mime Troupe had to do on their days off. They were all making phone calls and worried that they weren't even going to have a show in Santa Cruz, and because these shows are not cheap. I mean, it costs them a lot of money.
What do you estimate it costs them to do a show like this?
The Mime Troupe, I think, told us, it's some thousands of dollars. Certainly some thousands of dollars.
Well, here comes the Mime Troupe woman. Maybe she can actually...
Yeah, you can ask her in a moment when she gets here. And I want to say, too, that...
Hey, Mime Troupe woman, how much does it cost to do a show here?
Just the overall...
How much does it cost you to do a show?
I can't answer that specifically.
Right.
Is it thousands? Is it hundreds?
Thousands. It's definitely a few $1,000.
Per show, you think? Or?
Definitely. I mean, it's about $5,000 just between covering salaries alone. So
it's more than $5,000.
Yeah. Okay.
The porta potty, the getting the engineer to approve the set.
We understand your set is a risk. We may have to close it down.
Yes, we have been told that.
Watch your step, young woman.
So in any case, it was stunning that after so many years of successful performances here without any problem or any hitches, apparently after that many years, the city decides at the last minute to play hardball with the Mime Troupe. And it really upsets me and many other people, because the Mime Troupe is a great gift to the community. Wherever they go, they are doing great work. I mean, it is creative, it's engaging, it's humorous, it's thought-provoking, it brings the community together, it's great for children, it's great for families, it's great for adults. What?
And also, it's pretty vanilla, so it doesn't really threaten the city. When we've attempted to infuse the Mime Troupe with issues like when Peace Camp 2010 was parked for, two or 300 feet away, Mime Troupe didn't want us to announce anything about that. that issue or do anything around it. So there, I think they try to, you know, steer a politically correct course in the city as
right,
well.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's very interesting.
It pisses me off.
Yes. I mean, I think that, you know, I have a theory, and I don't know, you can, you and others, maybe some listeners can kind of keep track of this, but as we go into the future here, but I realize there's actually a trend with the city, and this is just a theory. I have a theory that in the subconscious of people in positions of power in the city of Santa Cruz, that they have, there's an insecurity, and I think that exists in many ways, of losing power. Because I realize the trend is that the great Morgani stands on a platform. Am I correct?
Yes, he usually does.
The great Morgani was threatened with arrest if he continued to play with the accordion downtown, right? He's probably one of the most popular...
He appeared in the fair, but I think he's abandoned his occasional plays in front of the jewelry store.
Right. I don't think anyone has seen him play on the street downtown that I'm aware of, other than in a wedding that went through downtown. In any case, I realize, well, the mime troupe stage is higher than 18 inches. Apparently that's a big thing for the city of Santa Cruz. So, if we'll see. If anybody else gets up above somebody in a position of power, they might just have to take them down. So we'll see. We'll see.
Well, you've got to preserve authority in these situations, Scott. You don't seem to realize. Without authority, we're lost.
Is that right? Oh, well,
far right.
Find out. You might be far right.
Indeed. And we've been talking with
Grant Wilson.
Thanks, Grant.
Thanks, Robert.
And in response to this, I did put in a Public Records Act request to Parks and Rec for any and all information to and from it and any other agencies inside the city, outside the city, inside the government, outside the government, regarding the San Francisco Mime Troupe over the last few years. And if I get that information from the city, I will be announcing it on free radio, at least over the stream of free radio, as long as I can.
Here at the Red Church, it's around 6:15, and I'm talking to that notorious newspaper hound.
This is the next day, so today being the 14th, it would be the 11th, August 11th.
Sarah Coon.
And Sarah pauses perhaps from a bite of her bagel, and what's the news, Sarah?
Nothing much, just in there talking about the Tent City.
Ah, so this was, yeah, that's right, I think I did read you. There was a critical editorial in the Sentinel about the Tent City.
Yes, it is.
I should say about the Sanctuary Village proposal.
Yes, it was.
And they were trashing it.
They're talking about how it was good.
Not the article I read, but maybe it was
the
different.
The one?
Yeah, the one that was on Sunday.
Oh.
But what did they say? What did you say that you wanted to? Whatever they put printed, I don't really care. What did you say?
Oh, I basically said that they need to work on it about if they're going to allow dogs or not, and couples together, and doing background checks and stuff, because most people won't go.
That's right. I think they used your quote to indicate, see, it's not going to work because people won't go. That was how the Sentinel, I think, spun it. Any other reports? How have the police been treating you, or hopefully not treating you? Not mistreating you, anyway.
We're tearing down the levee, so we have nowhere to camp.
And, so, example, where did you sleep last night? If you wish to reveal your sleeping spot.
In the forest.
Hassles?
Only by the raccoons and the bears.
And did you address the bears and tell them to mind their own beeswax?
No, I wasn't home.
I see. So the bears found a bear situation.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Anything else?
No.
But there is the California bear on the flag. We've got to not forget the bear. I haven't seen a wild bear, it's true. Anything else, sir?
No.
Any reports, sir, that you wish to pass on?
None that you could post.
No? Well, you know, I'll post anything, so.
And there actually is another meeting, according to an email I just received from Brent Adams of the Sanctuary Village. The so-called town hall meeting that is coming up again. It's going to be on the 28th, again at Loudon Nelson. I went to the last one, which was, I guess, a week ago Tuesday. And there was some crowd of about 40 or 50 people. I've talked about it on the air They claimed they were meeting the threat of Take Back Santa Cruz's attack on them, and also a group from Stab Santa Cruz, a website that's been critical of the sanctuary campground. A lot of the criticism is pretty ignorant, but criticism and bigoted in the sense that it comes from a position that denies people basic rights and treats them as less than human beings based on their economic status or their personal appearance. But there are some concerns that people on the left, so to speak, or people who are homeless, have about Sanctuary Village, which I've raised in the past. Some has to do with the leadership of the group that's doing it. Some have to do with the fact that it's such a limited kind of token proposal. Token isn't quite the word, but small. Some with the idea that it's being tailored to pander to the prejudices of conservatives in the community, so much so that it doesn't really respect the rights and needs of the homeless community that's supposedly being proposed for, somewhat like social service programs where they put a lot of money into the middle-class workers and very little into the needs of the homeless or the needy people themselves who are, you know, what the programs are supposedly for. I'm constantly complaining about the homeless lack of services center, which calls itself the homeless services center, really because of a lack of shelter that's there. There's the most basic need for homeless people at night is shelter, somewhere to go. And not necessarily a big warehouse where they can, although, you know, I suppose a warehouse beats ticketing outside, although being allowed to legal places outside is much better. And essentially leaving people alone who are not engaging in any criminal behavior is even better. And even better than that is opening up vacant buildings so that people can live like human beings and not like prisoners on the run. You know, that's important stuff. There is, this thing coming up on at the town hall meeting on the 28th. That's a ways away. And it looks like a generic ad of the kind that I've seen before from Brent Adams, which, you know, the issue, he needs to be given credit for continuing to bring up this issue again and again. And it needs to be brought up again and again, the issue that there's no legal place for people to go. I would feel a lot better if a lot of us got together to start defending homeless camps that currently exist in Santa Cruz. Going out there with cameras, going out there with sleeping bags, going out there with coffee, going out there in order to... part of this is simply to defend our own right to stop an expanding police state in Santa Cruz. Because this internal menace bullshit, which has been the external menace of, you know, Al-Qaeda and the terrorists and the jihadists and 9/11, has been used to totally militarize, significantly militarize our society. And the same thing is happening internally. They need an internal enemy, and so the internal enemy is the homeless and the needle users and, artists downtown who don't jump quickly enough when Officer Barnett tells them, "Here's my hoop. Time to leap up, doggy." So that's a really serious situation. There's also mythologies being spread, which I hopefully am going to finally put out some counter information on, which I've gotten from the police department itself. There was a claim a year ago of, and it was repeated in this editorial in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, that 33% of the arrests and 40% of the citations, and I may have that backwards in Santa Cruz, come from homeless people or people with a homeless address or an address at 115 Coral Street, which is the address of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But what that really means is it has to do with seven categories of crime that was surveyed by Deputy Chief Steve Clark. He selectively chose these categories, and that's where he got that information from. That's my understanding, based upon Public Records Act requests. And specifically, what I found, and I'm going to tell you what those categories are now, those categories that are the criminal categories that supposedly make up this homeless crime wave. And I'm looking for them right now. Hopefully we'll find them shortly. I'm having a little trouble. I think this must be it here. They are... Go ahead, Mike. Why don't you make a comment while I'm searching?
I read that article you're referring to, and it was very shallow. No even tinge of compassion. Totally just superficial mental opinions. And my opinion of the Sentinel has gone way down. If that's the only kind of, compassion that can come out of that place, I definitely not going to read that rag.
I don't really give a shit about compassion. That's the charity point of view. I don't care about compassion. I care about justice. And justice.
They go together.
Justice here. Together. No, justice has to do. You never get justice through compassion. You get justice through asserting rights and by people demanding their rights. They don't get it because somebody else gets compassionate.
No, compassion is
I don't want to argue about this.
Sensitivity. Compassion is a sensitivity, and with that sensitivity comes the ability to see injustice. So they are related. They come out of the same source.
I don't care if the authorities see injustice or not. What I care about is that those who are being oppressed stand up and demand it. Once it's demanded, as LBJ once put it, once you grab them by the balls, their hearts and minds will follow. It wasn't the heart of the South got changed through the civil rights workers. It was the laws got changed and people got out in mass and made demands, and therefore they had to stop doing what they've been doing. They didn't suddenly become compassionate. That's not how it works in our society, I don't think.
Sensitive people react quicker than dull people. And in Northern Ireland...
I don't have time for this debate.
Mike,
I don't have time for this debate. I'm sorry. I really don't. And I'm gonna
all right. Well, anyway, the thing is, you're not correct in what you're
saying.
We
disagree. We disagree. Yeah. I mean, my point in examining the seven offenses that Deputy Chief Steve Clark had... and he was claiming caused the 33% of all citations and arrests. He was referring to a group of citations, and these are the crimes he was talking about. Camping, which is survival sleeping. He was talking about panhandling after dark. He was talking about consuming alcohol in public. And he was also talking about behavior on public property. And what that means, it's 9.50. Actually, it's sitting on the sidewalk within 14 feet of a building or numerous other things. These, that's one of the main, the largest category of tickets under 9.50. He also, the other three penal codes were probation violation. And that can happen for all kinds of reasons that have nothing to do with real crimes. Disorderly conduct, possession of alcohol, or drunk in public. And there's also drug offenses. That is, say, possession of drugs and drug paraphernalia. And I'm a little unclear about this last code, 1203.2. I think there's also things like urinating, and I think theft was included. But he didn't compare the rate of theft, let's say, although I've heard a lot about homeless-on-homeless theft and also, of course, police theft of homeless property, the homeless theft rate with that of the broader community. I mean, homeless are more vulnerable to theft than people in the broader community because all their possessions are out there. There's no significant positive places to store your stuff unless you have money to pay for storage. If you're homeless, you can't even pay for a place to sleep. It's hard to pay for storage. You yourself have had your property taken, Mike, as I understand, on different occasions.
I'm not sure. When I was staying in the homeless shelter, I had things stolen. That's true. But, on the other hand, theft, these are people who, a lot of them don't have any money, and they have strong needs, maybe, and they're more tempted to steal things, I suppose. that's looking at the soft side of the coin, you know?
Well, what I'm saying is that these are not assaults. These are not... I mean, theft is a crime against the person. It is, it's a significant loss for a person. I do have the records and have not yet counted what percentage of these crimes, which the NIMBYs and the Take Back Santa Cruz crowd and the Santa Cruz City Council and the Task Force on Public Safety and the 100 Chronic Offenders Program, and I'm wondering if we're not also talking about the DAP, the Downtown Accountability Project, are all focusing on, which has to do with behaviors that are considered nuisance behaviors, but aren't really considered public safety in the most specific sense of really a danger to the person. They are a nice pretext for people who have property value concerns to remove homeless people from the area. They are a nice pretext for people who prefer gated communities or who are frustrated with the presence of homeless people panhandling downtown, let's say, or panhandling in their neighborhood, or just appearing around them. The presence of poverty makes them anxious. And either you can, you know, one's response can... It can be a form of guilt, it can be a form of compassion, it can be a form of anger, it can be a form of repugnance, it can be a form of fear, but it's an emotional response, and people have a lot to deal with in their lives, and they don't want to have to deal with that. And so the temptation is to remove that from sight. And that is really, I think, the major motivation here. It's this sort of attempt to sanitize and economically cleanse the town. It's been going on for decades via the city bureaucracy. They're the worst offenders. I mean, you may Take Back Santa Cruz may do its cleanups, and the clean team may have got a video where they're poking a homeless guy. But the city funds terrorists in uniform who go out and harass homeless people every night. They are more effective, and however nice they may appear to be in some ways, and as individuals, than Take Back Santa Cruz could ever be. Of course, Take Back Santa Cruz and the downtown neighbors and the Santa Cruz neighbors and the other groups that that Lynn Robinson was elected with the support of are all, she's the mayor, kind of in collusion with. There's sort of a common determination that there's some kinds of people that we don't want to see around town. And I'm hoping to be more specific about this. Hopefully by Sunday I'll have more. Michael, you're doing me a favor by kind of prodding me to get this information to you so you can know exactly, you know, what's going on in terms of the claims of the deputy chief and the reality of what the real situation is. So I'll be talking more about that on Sunday, and I'll hopefully be a little more specific and a little less tentative as I speak about it, what I call is Deputy Chief Clark's crapola. We're kind of reaching the end of our show here. I also sent a Public Records Act request to the city attorney to find out more about tickets that are supposed to be dismissed by the city if you're on a waiting list at one of the private nonprofits, specifically the River Street Mini Shelter and the Homeless Lack of Services Center. That's ridiculous. Private organizations should not be a basis for dismissing tickets. But it's also a safety valve, I have to admit. It was the first move by the Santa Cruz City Council, mainly because their attorney advised them to do it. And it came from the city attorney in 2010 after months of protest by activists who later spent time in jail, time under house arrest, time arrested. That's the Peace Camp 2010. In order to make sure that the courts don't turn around and start finding the city guilty of human rights violations, which... in theory, they could do. In fact, there are different cities where they've ruled laws like banning sitting, sleeping, or lying, as in Los Angeles, the Jones decision. It's an unconstitutional law. And that set up the city for some problems. Similarly, in Fresno, 2.8 million was, or is it 2.3, but it was somewhere in there, against the city and Caltrans authorities for seizing homeless property. So that was, I think, the reason for that. Mike, you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's any grounds in any organization for bringing a case against human rights violation with what's going on here in Santa Cruz.
We've been wondering that for decades. I mean, there always you can always try to bring a case.
Yeah.
The question is, who do you go to?
Right.
And usually, you know, you want to essentially you do it to embarrass the politicians and get some, you know, get them to back off a little. That's what we have done at Huff. Until such time as, you know, the people mobilize. And it's hard for a very small group like the homeless, relatively small, compared to the larger group. As I said, homeless and tenants are a much larger group. They're a majority. If homeless people and tenants got together, they could do all kinds of things. I also got a call from Punch 'em Back Pat, who I'm always creating a somewhat different name for every time I talk about her, Colby, who gave me an update that I'm going to try to post about the John Colby's experience, her brother at the Metro Transit Center, where he was confronted with by the Metro security guards with the demand that he stop filming. He had a device out that appeared to them to be a video camera, and he was. They told him you couldn't film on the Metro, and he said, no, I can. And eventually he was intimidated from stopping because he wanted to leave with the bus. But he did hold his ground for a while. And he did get the police department to affirm that you have a right to film at the Metro. Whether they'll do that next week is always, of course, a good question. One doesn't know if that's the case. So in order to confirm this, he wanted to get a copy of the report, what's called the information report that was created by the police department because he called up and made a complaint and talked about his concerns there and so forth. And they've been shoving him around on this stuff. They've been ducking on the issue. First, he was told that report was finished and he could have a copy of it. But most recently, he's been told, no, you can't have it because there's an ongoing investigation into this. And the strange thing is, of course, he's reported that he's gotten such information reports, somewhat different than an incident report. The information report has, I guess, presumably the police officer's commentary in it. And I've asked John if he wants to call into the show and talk. Maybe he will on Sunday. He has in the past had no trouble getting these reports emailed to him or given to him when he went to the and he goes into the police station. And he was told that first he was told the report would take much longer to do, but the officer who he originally talked to, Officer Scott Freeman, said, no, it's already finished. And there's no crime that's been committed. There's no victim. There's no suspect. So what are they investigating is the question. Why are they delaying further? He was then told, well, you can't get anything more because it's under investigation and we don't have to provide you with any public records around this. This kind of secrecy, this circling of the wagons, this, and apparently, according to John, change in policy from how he was treated previously is troubling. And I hope to discuss it further on the next show, which will be Sunday at 9:30 on Sunday morning. We're running out of... You have a few minutes left on what thing?
On that interview. Would you like to
hear? Oh, we haven't really got... We got a minute left before it's 8 o'clock. But maybe on Sunday, if you happen to be around or you have some more interviews, I really appreciate that. People should keep...